You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Well, hi, everybody. It's me, Joe Thrashenkill, here with my good buddy, Jordan. Jordan, how you doing?
You didn't sound too sure about that when you said my good buddy. You hesitated for a second.
I just realized that we've done 250 episodes of this show, and I fucked up the intro. Like, I've never done it that way before.
So we're nervous because we have special guests.
That's true. It's the Toilet Hell Radio Show, everybody. Yay! And we got some very special guests with us today. We got KW and Vic from Vile Creature. How you
That's
doing?
Us.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
I appreciate it. I think it's very apropos that we're on this podcast because I have been on the toilet of hell for the past 2 days after getting poisoned with a dairy iced cappuccino.
When was the last time maybe you think that you had had dairy?
He knows. You know. You remember.
Yeah,
it's traumatic.
It's probably like, was it like not like 2 years ago? And I probably violently shat myself. I'm really allergic to dairy. I went to Tim Hortons is.
Yeah, it's Dunkin' Donuts, but for people in Canada.
Yeah, it's very, very close. We have their big drink is called the Ice Cap, which is like a
frozen coffee mixed with
ice and
milk.
Yeah, and milk. But up here they do like certain Tim Hortons have soy versions of it. And I went to go get a soy ice cap and I was in a rush to cool down my brain and I slurped about 3/4 of it down and got home and then Vic took a sip and was like, oh, this is dairy. I was like, are you sure? They were like, yeah. I'm like, well, we'll find out in 5 minutes. Yeah. And then, 5 minutes later, I was, big spooning the toilet for the next 24 hours. It was real fun.
I drove by a sign today that said diarrhea awareness, and I did not understand. So maybe it was like, you should really, yeah, maybe you should get in touch with the organization.
The most important thing going on in the world right now is diarrhea awareness month.
Of course.
Yeah. I wasn't familiar with that particular month, but I mean, it is important. I'm glad that people are aware of it. Actually, me and Jordan, we fucked this up the other day because we were making fun of diarrhea, which is apparently like one of the biggest killers across the globe.
We should feel so bad for making fun of it.
For shame.
Such a privilege to make fun.
It is. And, you know, we learned our lesson, though, right, Jordan?
I now firmly check my privilege whenever I'm going to the bathroom.
I mean, to be fair, you are the world's most purveyors of like diarrhea awareness with a podcast called Toilet of Hell.
I'd like to believe that. I would.
You should see some of the emails that we get, and it's people who definitely just know the name of the podcast or the website and have not actually visited it because they are looking for something very different.
I was about to say, how many fetish emails do you get, let's say, a year?
You know, I stopped looking at emails. It was good for my health. I passed it off to other Toilet of Hell members. So if you email us, I'm not gonna read it. Sorry. But I sometimes check out the search terms that get people to toiletofhell.com. And it's not good, man. It's actually pretty bad.
What's your like top two favorite things that have gotten people to Toilet of Hell, or most memorable? Won't say favorite.
I mean, like most memorable is stuff that like is illegal to type into Google.com. Like agents should kick in your door if you were doing that. But lots of people out there, they don't care none. Doesn't matter to them. So
two girls, one toilet.
Something like that. Yeah.
Two toilets, one hell.
You know, it wasn't exactly my. What isn't exactly
the, your cup of ice cream?
Jesus Christ! What exactly my purpose in life to start a site that attracted solely perverts? But here we are.
Your parents should be very proud of you.
Yeah, exactly. So Vile Creature. It's easier to refer to the two of you collectively, I think. You have something pretty exciting coming out here with a brand new record, Glory. Sorry, how would you pronounce the? How would you inflect the name of the record?
I would
glory apathy took helm.
Yeah, probably just glory apathy took helm.
Okay, I was prepared to call it glory apathy took helm.
Just like an old like a carnival barker.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's either that or glory apathy took helm.
That's very. Yeah, very monotone and monotonous. No, I like the title's definitely very tongue in cheek, so I feel like you can say it with whatever inflection makes you happy. That would sound good to me. I feel like we just call it glory at this point.
I suppose, you know, in the time that it takes to write the music, record it, and go through a promotional cycle, it could take up some precious time to throw the full thing out there. So. You know,
I will say it is really fun in the middle of interviews when they're talking about it and you've said the name a million times to just go through it really fast. Like, yeah, you know, on our new record, Glory Apathy took helm, I just feel like it's really fun to do that.
So this is coming out here on Prosthetic, right?
That's correct. Yes, Prosthetic Records.
Now, when did you first get involved with those guys?
Oh, August of 2018. I think
August 17th.
20. Actually, you're probably not very far off. So our last record was called Cast of Static and Smoke. And we did it with two really amazing DIY labels, A Halo of Flies in the US and Dry Cough in the UK. It was the second time in a row that right after releasing a record, the label that we released it on shut down. That happened right away. And
the first one should have.
Yeah, that's true. Right when we were getting ready to release that last record, Prosthetic actually got in touch about potentially putting out a CD version of it, but our timelines didn't meet up because we recorded it in like the beginning of December. The first song came out right at the beginning of January and it was out at the end of February. Like it was a very quick turnaround. And they like a lot of lead up. After Halo of Flies stopped operating, Steve from Prosthetic just reached back out and was like, hey, if you want to release records with us, we'd love to do that. And yeah, we had some back and forth and asked them to do a bunch of stupid, wonderful things. And they said, yes, absolutely. And yeah, we agreed to work together. And it's been kind of amazing, honestly.
Jordan, were you also on Halo of Flies or was that one of your buddies?
No, I was never on Halo of Flies. I was on a couple of other smaller indie labels, but I did want to ask, I know Prosthetic Records has kind of been more outspoken as a label, kind of speaking out on a lot of issues that you as people in this band kind of line up as well. How important is that for you to be working with either a label or other bands or promoters or something like that to kind of have the same beliefs and feelings?
When KW and I were like discussing switching or like figuring out if we were going to work with another record label, that was the most important thing, is that we could have someone stand behind what we stand behind. So like it was just really important to us.
Yeah, we do this like what I'm about to say, please don't take it as me saying we don't take our band seriously, but we do this purely for fun. This is very much a creative endeavor, an artistic outlet, and pure vacation fun for both of us. So we didn't have any pressure to release with anyone or do anything. We just enjoy playing music and we're very staunchly in our political beliefs and we're very out front with them, as you said. We're never going to work with somebody who wasn't not only just we weren't going to work with someone who was going to be like, okay, you just like do your thing. That's fine. But we wanted somebody who like stood with us
and understood. Ran into the fight.
Yeah. And it was a really easy decision. Like I think when we were talking with Prosthetic, they like sent over a contract and we looked at it and we literally like just kind of wrote all over it and made our own notes and just kind of were like, we can do what we want because we don't care, and sent it back to them. And to their credit, they signed it without changing anything and sent it to us. So they did everything on our own terms. And from day one, like we're super comfortable with who we are and they felt very motivated to help us be the best us that we can be, which is kind of all we care about. It's like, I don't want to work with people who are going to like, be shitty, because I think we're just trying to be decent to other people at a
that was level. Part of that was in the contract, literally. But in more legal terms.
I appreciate the sentiment there that this is something that basically you're doing as an outlet aside from, you know, the regular constraints of your life. So it would make the most sense to work with people that are most agreeable to work with in that endeavor. And I think that's also something that maybe younger folks, aspiring musicians, don't really understand about this particular realm of music, is that it can't really ever be a job. This is something that we have to get by with what we can get by with.
Yeah, 100%. Like, we play a niche genre of a niche genre.
I feel like a lot of people who are doing different roles in this realm, as you say, understand that, and like the love of the music pretty much takes a priority. And I think everyone tries to help each other out monetarily and with resources for the most part, which is rad.
Yeah. And yeah, we have like, we both have like, we own a business together and I own another business. We're both like, we work full time. We've got six cats and a dog at home. We like have our full time regular lives. So this band is very much, like I said, just like, it's our passion. It's our hobby. It's how we take our vacation. And it's also really important to us. And it's nice to be able to make that distinction. I think like having, like putting that pressure on yourself to like try to make a living and quote unquote make it, man, is just, it's a ridiculous notion.
I don't want to live in a world where artists can like have a career off of their work. It sucks, but I mean, it's just kind of the reality that we're just not going to make money from this band. So yeah, we're cool with it.
When you're saying that you're in a sub-genre of the, let's just say, extreme metal world, what is the specific term you would give for your sub-sub-genre?
Well, I think Becky from Sub-Sub.
Sub-Squared.
Yeah, Sub-Squared genre. We play heavy music, and it's really slow. I think Becky Laverty, who like wrote the press release for our record, she called us an experimental doom band. And I think we've really taken a liking to it, and I think we're going to stick with it, despite all evidence to the contrary. It's ours.
Experimental is the best word to use when describing a band, because it's just the word version of shrugging. Just like, I don't know really how to explain this, but it's good. Listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it. Like, how would you? It's one of those things where I feel like it's one of those words. Like, how are you gonna describe Sun Ohm to your grandmother?
Wow, it's kind of like
that's
that.
Fair.
Yeah, no, I like experimental doom because I just imagine, you know, long-haired folks with white lab coats and the sleeves cut off.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're not far off from my everyday attire.
I wanted to talk about this just because it's so damn striking, and I'm sure that you're aware of that, and that was the intention. But your cover art for this new record, it is really gross.
Thank you.
And I'd like to learn a little bit about the art itself and the thought behind it.
Sure. It's actually funny because we got our shipment of LPs today. So this was the first time that we actually got to hold them and see the actual physical manifestation of the art in that format. I mean, we got CDs a week ago. It's cool to see it in that realm. When it comes to the art, we thought really long and hard about what we wanted to do. We had a very solidified idea about this. This conversation happened after the music was written and recorded. And so we wanted to take all our feelings about the lyrics and the actual music and figuring out a manifestation of that. So we decided to use photography, and we worked and we had a few people that we wanted to work with. We did have to ask a few people about modeling though, and we were upfront with everyone about what they were going to have to do, and we gave everyone an out. And
just in case anybody hasn't seen it, it involves a person with a lot of worms in their mouth.
Yes. Yeah. So we knew from the beginning that was going to be it. So we were upfront with everyone, and the lovely
Brianna Duguay.
She's very down for the art, and she agreed to it. And we kept giving her an out just in case. I don't want to make her feel pressured.
I feel like we maybe asked her more times. Are you sure you want to do this? You cannot do this. Then we had to ask her to do it, and it was definitely interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, working with Danica as photographer was amazing because she knew how to work all the angles and lighting, and so having people professionally be able to take our vision and bring it to life was important.
What I find so striking about the album art is like not just the worms in the mouth, but the look on the model's face, and you can kind of see the regret in her eyes. It's like, oh, I made a mistake, and it's like captured right on the album.
Yeah, we are silly people, but when it comes to the meaning behind it, I feel like it is very. We really wanted to convey a lot of indifference and maybe I don't know.
In the middle of it, Brie, when we originally talked to Brie about doing it, we kind of had a conversation about the intentions behind what we're doing and the emotions we want to convey. And at that time, Brie was going through a lot of stuff. And I think one of the big reasons why she agreed to do it was because she felt like she could utilize doing art, like big quotation marks, doing art as a means of like processing through not necessarily her trauma, but like her feelings and a down period she was going through. And it's her emotional work is, I feel like, what comes through on the record cover, not just how we set it up. And that is like, that meant everything to me. I will say a ridiculous part of it is that we went through 12 different times of having to load her up with worms. So 12 different full-on takes of doing that. And the final photo that we used was from the second take.
Were any worms harmed in the process of this filming?
No, it says it. It is inside of our liner notes. No worms were harmed in the making of this album art. They all live very happily in our compost bin.
So in this process, is it just like, here's a handful of worms, put them in and take pictures? Or are you kind of a little more gentle with it? And here's one, here's another, how you doing, here's another?
So I will share a video with you when this is done that you're more than welcome to put up as an accompaniment to this podcast. It is a video of the fifth or sixth time that we had to set up for the photos, and it involves a giant handful of worms going completely into her mouth and her having to close her mouth to hold them while she gets set up until she opens it so they all start coming out.
You did put a worm in your mouth in solidarity.
I did. So did Danica.
I really tried. Like, I was about to put it in my mouth and I almost threw up. So I'm sorry.
You tried so hard and you got so far. In the end, it doesn't really matter.
I noticed that you had also worked with Stephen Wilson on this as well. Can you, a former Toilet Radio alumnus, can you tell us exactly how that worked?
Yeah. His new name is actually Stephen Cute as Fuck Wilson.
That's his legal middle name.
So
Steven's actually done probably 90% of the art for our band since its inception. I think the joke that we have with Steven is he's the art director for our band.
We love his vision and he's just a wonderful person. So happy to be friends and colleagues.
Yeah, he's a joy to be around, a joy to work with. And I end up coming up with a lot of really ridiculous ideas for things. And he's always the first person to jump on it, be really excited, and then do the thing that I wanted, but 10 times better. He's genuinely one of my favorite people alive. And he spearheaded all of our, I think every shirt that we have right now, our flag, the cover of our VHS, the album artwork and its layout, the CD artwork and its layout, our gummy worms, literally everything that we've done around this record, Steven has put together from a layout and illustration perspective, and he kills it every time.
Let's rewind a little bit. A VHS for this record. Gotta say, I don't think I've seen that used by many bands.
I just want to say one thing is that in a sub genre of music, producing something for a subgenre of that of like horror nerds who like VHSs is a special kind of thing that KW loves to come up with.
Yeah, I exist solely to make myself laugh.
But yeah, people are stoked on it. It's really cool to see it. The cover looks amazing. We're excited about... So the what's on the video is the actual video from You Who Has Never Slept, as well as footage that was compiled by our friend Andrew. And yeah, excited to unveil that.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Are you one of those folks that has just a huge, huge, ungodly assortment of VHS tapes?
Well,
no, I don't have any. I have a big love of VHS because it's all I had growing up.
Poser.
I was definitely very inspired by my good friend Sherlane, who is a tattoo artist at the tattoo shop that I own. She's has one of the most amazing VHS collections I've ever seen. There's an entire room in her house dedicated to it, and it is truly a sight to see. And like going through, I feel like when we were doing the album cover, it had a real, like intentionally, it had a real Suspiria vibe. When we came up with the concept for our music video for the song You Who Has Never Slept, which is like a, it's again a Suspiria vibe, but it was really just like late 70s, early 80s horror, like tones and tropes. I just kind of felt like the idea of doing like a visual version of the album would be really fun. And like we've done audio cassettes for like tapes for every record we've done except for this one. And I was just like, VHS makes sense. And there is a place in Toronto, which is only 45 minutes from us, that does like does professional duplication of them. I think it's one of the only ones that still does it. And yeah, it was just like it was an easy thing to just like, let's just do 100 of them and maybe some people will enjoy them. And I think at this point they're either all gone or there's like just a few left. So I win on my half.
Nailed it.
Yeah, crushed it.
I loved the I have a bag of Sour Bright Crawlers on my desk right now. So I love that you also did a tie-in with Gummy Worms. Can you tell us about what that was? Tell us about that process and what that was going to benefit.
Oh, again, I just like making myself laugh, and I come up with really dumb ideas, and then Vic just is like, "I don't know if this is a good idea," and then I kind of push it through in a real bullish and
rude way. You sound so kind.
In a real bullish and rude way. And then we end up enjoying it 95% of the time. But yeah, I don't know. It just, when we did the album, like, what was it? When the album cover came out, there was a big reaction to it. And I think I made a joke on Ye Old Twitter just about like the Glory Apathy Took Helm Challenge. Recreate the album cover with anything but worms. And a bunch, like we had like 70 different people send in, like we had like hockey pucks, people did it with hockey pucks and guitar cables, toothbrushes.
Not 70.
There was a lot of different ones that came in, and it was awesome. And I just, yeah, I don't know. The idea of doing gummy worms just made sense and was fun. And we were able to like source some really rad ones and come up with packaging with Stephen Wilson's help. And it was a, I don't know. It just seemed fun. We were always going to do it for charity. And then obviously North America is in a very large and much needed uprising at the moment. And it just made sense to donate the money towards an amazing cause like national bail funds.
I'm going to pick on you a little bit just because we haven't had, we've had very few Canadians join us on this show. Jordan, how many do you think we've had now? Like two?
I think two.
Yeah. So you're our third Canadian show.
Who are the
show.
Other Canadians?
We had Robin from Drunk in a Graveyard. And who was the other Canadian?
Junius from Canada?
Yeah.
No, they're from Boston.
No, it wasn't Junius. I apologize to whatever Canuck we're leaving out. Yeah, I know that it was a good episode. Sorry.
We're really making up your quota here as number three and four.
But I will admit my... I guess my ignorance overall to Canadian culture. Do you also dealing with a similar plague of police brutality?
Oh well, the police is definitely too large for its own good and has been bloated, like when it comes to like funding for way too long. Not as militarized as American cities are. But I mean, there's a long history of the RCMP being a branch of colonialism. That's just fact, a historical fact. And they continue to inflict a lot of racialized violence that could, like, yeah.
I mean, the police as a system is a, like that structure is literally based in racism, right? Like the North American, policing in like institution was started to help catch slaves. It's literally founded in racism, and that has, like, Canada is not a less racist country. We're just more polite about hiding our racism. We have a huge issue with police not putting any effort in towards finding the hordes of missing Indigenous women that are up here. The day after George Floyd was murdered, a woman named Regis was thrown off of a 24th floor balcony in Toronto by two white police officers, and she was a Black woman. And when the news stations called, they said it was a suicide. Don't bother coming, even though there were witnesses that said the police had thrown her off the balcony. So we're definitely not immune to it. And I actually grew up in the States. I'm from Canada, but spent a lot of time there. So I think the you can see from all of these extra protests and like all over the world that this is not just a American issue. It's like a police need to be defunded and worldwide.
The information that is coming from institutions and the government, like the premier of Quebec and the premier of Ontario, have been like they just went on record saying that racism isn't a problem. So this is what the coverage is. And then the media perpetrates that.
Seems a little odd, considering wasn't there a thing with, you know, your prime minister like wearing blackface and stuff like just a couple of years ago?
Multiple times.
Okay.
that man loves pretending like he is a savior of the left.
One good thing is that our MPP or MP Matthew Green is really, really outspoken and radical about things that matter. So
do y'all know what an MP is?
Man, I have no idea. Military police is what I would hear.
Person.
No, a member of parliament.
you got to back up. What's a parliament?
it's kind of like your Senate, but with a lot more formal rules.
Okay.
It could be funkadelic.
Yeah.
That's, they all go there it could be and they talk about, they make and do law. They make and do law.
And they're all named George Clinton. Yeah, if you, for sake of conversation, it's not the same, but like we have, so like you have Congress people, we have members of provincial parliament, you have the Senate, we have members of parliament. So like a senator would be an MP, a congressperson would be an MPP, roughly.
This is why I'm stupid. I can't keep up with anything. That's rad, though.
That's your Canadian political lesson for the day.
I mean, my brain has expanded three times since we started now. So with the bail funds that you were benefiting with these with the gummies, those are distributed across North America then?
And the world, yeah. Or are you talking about like the bail funds? I thought you were talking about the gummies. Yeah, gummies were mailed everywhere. The bail funds were sent towards, I believe, it's the National Bail Fund, where it just distributes towards, like, I think it was like 70 different bail funds throughout North America.
Okay, I think that's the one we gave it to, Jordan.
Yeah, my band, we didn't sell a lot of money on the last band camp stuff, but I was happy as hell to give just $150 to the Know Your Rights campaign. And I think it was really great to see so many bands and so many labels all just come together and donate to all these different bail funds and Black Lives Matter organizations. And I guess, is there any plans for Vile Creature to continue either next month with Bandcamp Day again or other sorts of fundraising types of sales going forward?
I don't think we've put a lot of thought for band stuff at the moment, but we, like, our business here in Hamilton is currently doing a raffle. We're giving away a year's worth of cinnamon buns in a raffle. To raise money for two local organizations that are promoting furthering like Black arts and like Black healthcare in Hamilton, which is our area. We try to just be generally involved on like a day to day business, like on a day to day level, as well as like, you know, sorry, I'm going to phrase this. It's a long sustained fight. It's not just about how much you raise at the moment, but it's about how 3 months from now, 6 months from now, and a year from now, you're still putting up the fight. And it's something that we,
I feel like every contribution matters monetarily. And when it comes to fighting like the hard fight of injustices and oppression, we really need to figure out how to use our skills and resources. It's not just contributing monetarily. So figuring out what you could do in the long run with like contributing to your community, I think, is the meaningful thing to do.
Yeah. And I think one last point for me is, Jordan, you're talking about how like your band didn't do a lot. $150 is a ton of money, eh? Like that's a great and wonderful thing to donate. Like $10 is a wonderful amount. Literally any amount is a great thing. And I feel like, size comparing is, it's not the time for it, but there's no purpose to it because every single contribution counts, you know?
Yeah, I think I just always have that kind of underlying Jewish guilt of I should be doing more. I should give more. There are too many organizations and everyone needs help. And then you kind of get frozen, just like,
well, I have that overlying Jewish mother sense of telling you that it's fine, but also guilting you into not doing that again.
And also I should be eating more.
You should probably also eat more bubble and make sure that you call your bubby.
Well, you should not give up.
You're so skinny, Jordan. Come on.
I'm a growing boy.
What are they feeding you in the Northeast?
Mostly tendies, I guess.
Yeah, not great pizza.
Where in the Northeast are you?
Providence.
Oh, well, I mean, you've got Nice Slice, so...
Yes, Nice Slice is good.
Nice Slice is the best. I lived in Providence for a very small amount of time.
Yeah, right on. Well, next time you come around, we'll have to get some Nice Slice.
We'll have to get some Nice Slice, go across the street and get a burrito as well, then go down to the theater, and then go visit my old bus that I used to live in Seekonk, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah, I know Seekonk. Nice Slice moved, so it's not on Thayer Street anymore near Brown.
What? They moved? Where are they?
They moved. They're kind of on the other side of Providence now.
Where did they move to? Onlyville? That would make sense.
In that general direction.
Okay. I'm surprised that they moved away from Brown.
I think it was a rent thing.
Makes a lot of sense. This has been Providence Talk segment on Toilet of Hell, brought to you by Guitar Hero, made in Providence.
I think it kind of makes sense with your connection with Providence that for a while Providence did have a lot of guitar and drum or bass and drum bands, whether it was like The Body or Onlyville Sound System. So I can kind of see how that might affect Vile Creature at least a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like I've lived in a lot of, like specifically me, I've lived in a ton of different places, and I feel like my... the way I play guitar and how I think of tone has definitely been affected by like every individual city.
Can we get a quick ranking on best and worst cities you lived in?
Worst cities, every city in Florida that I lived in, all tied. Yeah. Best city I lived in? I'm still really partial to Providence, but I love Hamilton. I really like where I live right now. It's kind of beautiful and perfect. I also like St. Catharines, where I lived before this.
And so, Hamilton might get a hockey team at some point.
No, where you're stuck in, we have the Bulldogs, which is an OHL team, but you're stuck in the Blackberry times when, that guy, what was it? Jim, whatever his name is, Basile was trying to buy the, Phoenix Coyotes out of bankruptcy and move them to Hamilton. But yeah, that'll never happen.
Good.
Hey.
Well, I mean, good that, like, there shouldn't be an NHL team in a fairly small city-ish town, especially with the Maple Leafs so close.
Exactly.
Wait. Yeah,
people will... we're going to come after you in a second.
Hold on. Wait. Let's back this up. This is now Toilet of Hell hockey segment.
Are we dropping the gloves?
Yeah, legitimately. Toronto has like 7 million people, and it's like larger than tons of different city. Like, it's larger than Chicago, and it's a comparable size to LA, which both have two team. Like, you know, there's two baseball team. There's three baseball teams in LA, two in Chicago. Like, Toronto can definitely handle a second hockey team, and Hamilton could handle one as well. It's not Toronto that's the issue. It's Buffalo. The Sabres are the issue, because Hamilton's close. Like, we're halfway between Toronto and Buffalo, and putting a team in Hamilton will draw all those Niagara people away from the Buffalo Sabres, who need every fan that they can get.
Maybe if the border is closed forever, then there you go.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this Canadian stealing American jobs out of Buffalo.
You mean fans?
It's I don't really follow hockey. I just figured it was like a paid gig.
We basically annexed Buffalo anyway.
I mean, you'd get the football fans that drunkenly jump through folding tables during a Buffalo Bills game. So if you want that, go for it.
Like, drunkenly jumping through tables, you're just talking about Andy from Every Time I Die and his wrestling career.
The Butcher.
And the Blade.
And the Candlestick Maker.
And the Bunny.
So did he just steal his moves from the insane drunkards that populate Buffalo every Sunday morning?
Probably.
The cops? Yes.
Oh, shit!
Got him.
Nail it.
So you were supposed to play Roadburn this year, and everything that's happening around kind of put an end to it. I guess I'm always curious as to how bands end up getting on these big festivals. Was there any sort of process involved, or did they just kind of reach out to you?
So we played Roadburn. So we played Roadburn 2019, which was our first time playing. I don't remember exactly how. I think we might have just sent cat pictures to the people involved.
Like, actually.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we just sent cat pictures, and we're like, hey, these are our cats. We love your festival. Becky, who works at Prosthetic, is also a part of, like, runs the PR for Roadburn. I think Walter just sent us, Walter is the person who runs Roadburn, and he just sent us an email saying, I love your cats, I also love your band.
How you get your foot in the door these days.
He said, I love your cats, I also love your band, I would love for you to come and play Roadburn. And that was like, I think before we started a band, when we were just like giggling and talking about the idea of playing music together, it was like, could you imagine one day playing Roadburn? It would be amazing.
That was all you. I didn't know what Roadburn was.
Sure. 6 years ago. Noob. But yeah, it was just one of those things where it's been a huge dream of mine for a long time. And our show at Roadburn 2019 was one of the greatest experiences playing of my entire life. After, like, for 2020, it was at Roadburn 2019 that Walter asked Tanya from Bismuth and I to write a song as a commissioned piece for Roadburn 2020, which we worked on for a year, and now I guess it's will happen at Roadburn 2021.
Jordan, you don't have animals, and that's really holding your career back.
I know, I really gotta get a cat now. That's the secret.
Do any of your bandmates have cats?
No, they have two dogs. We could see if that will work. Does two dogs equal one cat for Roadburn?
You, my friend, are fucked.
Yeah, you gotta start whoring out the animals to get some recognition.
Yeah, Jordan, I'll just give you all the pictures of my animals. I got more than enough to spare, man.
Between the cats and the dogs and the chickens, I suppose that's true.
Yeah. One big happy family of strange creatures. Yeah.
I feel like a chicken would get you a lot of attention.
You know, I try to be funny on Twitter, and for the most part, it doesn't really work. And then I just post a picture with no caption of one of my chickens, and it gets so much more traction than anything else that I do.
Exactly. You're a social media expert. There you go.
Yeah. You should just make sure that you're always being more of a cock.
There we go. I like it. So, do you have any idea when you might... does anybody have any idea when you might start playing shows again?
You already answered your own question, my friend.
Damn.
Yeah, I have no clue. We had so many plans this year, and it's a good thing that they were canceled, because COVID-19 is fucking scary, and I just want people to be okay. And yeah, I, as soon as we're able, and it's like not only that we're able, but that it's like safe and reasonable for people to go to shows and for us to be able to travel to play shows, we're definitely going to do them because we have a record coming out and we'd like to be able to play those songs live. But also, like, remember, our borders closed. Like, I can't go to the United States right now. So even if, like, they were to, all the venues in the U.S. were to open, if Canada keeps the border closed, there's nothing I can do about it.
Huh. Well, we'll just enjoy all of our music while, I guess, choking to death, feeling smug about it.
There you go.
I don't know. Have you considered? I mean, I've seen a lot of bands try some non-traditional things. You know, doing concert streams in front of an empty audience, or I've heard talk of some of the bigger country artists doing drive-through shows, drive-in shows rather. You think that might work
for us?
Yeah.
I feel like no one would come.
Yeah, I don't think we have the pull. So it would be interesting to play a drive-in show, though, playing outdoors with just, like, it would be so reverberated. It'd be really weird and fun.
We haven't played outdoors ever, right?
No, we've never played outdoors.
I'd be worried. I don't know. I feel like...
Oh, live streams.
I mean, we... it's not like... I feel like we're pretty lazy to do live streams. So. too lazy. No one wants to see us in our house doing stuff.
Yeah, there's no way I could be bothered to put pants on.
I mean, that could be part of the appeal, I suppose.
No pants club? Yep.
Can you stop staring at my underwear, Vic?
Stop. Yeah, you're wearing underwear right now.
I don't know, like, not saying we're never gonna do a live stream, but I just don't have plans for it right now. It's not the same. I think it's wonderful that so many people are, like, it seems like a lot of people are really enjoying all the live streams, and there are some bands doing some really cool, like Aranzi Panzuzu did that phenomenal weird live stream of them playing through their whole new record, which I think actually, like, added a whole new depth to that.
I really like the Kalaylin Meklo. That's not how you pronounce it. It's I don't know how to I don't know how to say it in Icelandic, but they put on a really, really cool thing. So
yeah, and even what was that? I don't really like the music of the band, but that band Code Orange, right at the beginning of COVID-19, had their show canceled, but they still played it with a film crew in that venue in Pittsburgh, and it was like they played it as though people were there, and I have so much respect for that. It turned out super cool, and I've seen some of that video, and it's beautiful. There's a lot of people doing really rad things with live streams. I think I'm too tired at the end of every day to think about that type of stuff. I'd rather just make, like, a stupid fart joke merch idea and go to sleep.
It's kind of funny. This is the second interview in a row now that we've had somebody tell us that we have to listen to the new Aranzi Panzuzu. Jordan, have you listened to it yet?
I have not listened to the new Orangina Pusnusnu yet.
We got to do it, man. We have to do it. Everybody's telling us.
Well, it's not even about listening to the record. For me, it was just that live. Like, I haven't sat down and gone through the record, but I did watch good portions of that live stream, and it was beautiful and weird and cool. Yeah, it's just interesting. I just think a lot of people are doing really interesting art nowadays, regardless of the music, and that's really fun to see people, like, find new ways to be expressive with, like, the constraint of not being able to be around anyone or leave your house.
Yeah, it's like a double-edged sword, because, like, it could be a little bit, it could be more accessible because it's more potentially DIY, doing things with what you have, but it also at the same time could be inaccessible if you don't have, like, you know, anything fancy when it comes to, like, recording or, like, whatever production to, like, put on a show. So
I don't know if that makes it inaccessible.
I don't know. Some people could feel like it has barriers to, like, performing or, like, putting on performances and such, through the internet.
I feel like there's a future in performance, like, while sitting in your car and wearing Oakleys just straight into the camera. I think that could be the next big thing.
You're talking about most hip-hop videos from the early 90s?
I was thinking more about the genre of a grieved man yells at his phone camera while sitting behind the wheel.
Yeah, when you describe, like, an incel perfectly there.
Did you just call early 90s hip-hop incel music? Because I heard that, and I'm going to report you.
I feel we've crossed wires on this one.
I wanted to ask about the Black Flags over Brooklyn show that you did with Grim Kim not that long ago, and just kind of like what that experience was like to kind of play with such like-minded bands on a bill where you like didn't have to worry about anyone being shitty or edgelords or sketchy.
Oh, yeah, that was perfect, since especially because Brooklyn Bazaar, the security there are like well-trained and are anti-fascist, and like they have had problems in the past, and they take it like security safety, or like they take people's safety very seriously when it comes to potential like weird agitator people trying to disrupt an event like that. But yeah, it was really cool to be like amongst our musical peers and to make new friendships. That's always a good time. And to eat pizza from Vinny's Pizza. Love that pizza.
Do you think there's a future for similar shows like that? I know there's kind of been this like big upswell of activism recently with everything that's going on, but like, do you think that kind of might be a catalyst for more shows like this, or more bands speaking out and being more comfortable with kind of this leftist or forward thinking ideas?
I don't know, maybe. Like, you're definitely seeing people either become an ally or show their ass right now, which is
all their ass.
Yeah, just their whole entire ass. And it's really, it's nice to see people have to be at like a bare minimum say that they care about Black lives legitimately. Yeah, I don't know. When we started this band, all of our shows were with like queercore bands and noise acts, because we were like a Southern Ontario queer doom band being out front with politics. And I don't think that people didn't want to play with us, but we maybe had a hard time finding other heavy bands that were not necessarily comfortable with playing with the band, but like as out front as we are, or just like left of the dial, for lack of a better term. And not that they didn't exist, I just don't know if we had the ability to find them. And it's cool 6 years later that there are so many outspoken people. And like, yeah, I don't feel like we've played a show with a shitty band in a really long time. And like, we've also played a bunch of really well attended shows. So it's nice to see that people caring and people being outspoken is not a barrier to playing rad shows.
Yeah. As much as like bigger festivals that have been going on and have a legacy are awesome, I love to see new smaller DIY festivals happening that are being run by like young marginalized people, and figuring out and like getting community resources to like put on like arts stuff. And I want to see more of that. So I think that's gonna be hopefully a thing after, or if COVID gets handled and everyone's safe, I hope that that's going to be more of a thing.
Being in an outwardly political band, I mean, I've had a little bit of experience with my band dealing with this, but people coming up to you after a set or after a show and maybe not getting what you're all about and like trying to engage you with conversation. Have you ever had to deal with that at all? And like, how do you kind of deal with that situation?
Yeah, I don't think we've had a ton of like, not a ton of negative experience with people coming up afterwards and be like, hey, queers, that was stupid. But to be fair, also, like, if you've seen any video of us playing live in the last few years, we pretty explicitly say on stage who we are, what we're about. And if you don't agree with it, just like, meet us outside. We have fists. We're pretty open about our like backing up our words with actions. So I people don't generally no one's taken us up on it, except for one guy in St. Catharines once, and I just had to walk him outside by the collar of his shirt in the middle of a song. That was fun. We're down to engage with people in conversations always, but right after the shows it can be really hard, because we not like we both put a lot into it, so we're both really tired. But like, I'm a big dude and I put a lot of energy onto being on stage. Sometimes after we play, I just need to like sit down and have a cigarette and catch my breath for a while. So it can be really hard to engage right after we play, but I feel like we've had a lot of really rad conversations with people. I will say there was this one time we played in Rochester near the beginning of our band, and we were playing the band that played right before us. They played for like an hour and they were really like Southern,
like down home style metal, and the vocalist and guitarist in that band was wearing a hat with a Confederate flag on it. And
fucking Rochester?
I was like, this isn't gonna go well. This is a bad idea. This ain't great. So we go on, we play, we go through our set, and the guy is front and center the whole time, intently watching us. And we get to the part at the end of the set, and this is around, like, right around when our first record came out, and we get around to the end of the set where we're talking about the last song we're going to play and how it's about our experiences as queer people and about trans rights, just, like, all our, the big, you know, the minute-long statement that we say at basically every show. And he's just really intently watching me the whole time. And through the entire 14-minute ending song, he's just staring into my eyes while I play. And I'm like, I am going to get fucked up at the end of this. It's fine, I'll fight back, but I am going to get the shit kicked out of me. So we get off stage with the last band that plays. We load out, go to the merch booth doing stuff. Some couple people are buying merch, and this guy's standing over at a pool table, and he's just looking over, and he's looking over, and he finally walks up after, and he goes, hey, heard what you said about trans people. And I'm like, mm-hmm. And then he grabs his wallet and pulls out a picture of a child and goes, this is my son. He's 8 years old and he's trans. I appreciate the fuck out of what you said. And then he buys all of our merch and he leaves. And he was lovely. And yeah, it was.
Hopefully he burns his hat, but lovely person other than that.
Hopefully he burns his hat. But yeah, it was just one of those things where I was like, you know, I had like an hour and a half of panic where I'm like, I'm going to get into a fight and this guy's bigger than me and he's got a handlebar mustache and he looks like he knows how to handle a crowbar well. I think I'm fucked. And it just ended up with a really lovely like conversation at the end other than his abhorrent hat. But it also goes to prove that there are a lot of people who don't have the language or don't necessarily understand the imagery who are also, when it comes time to throw down, will be the first people to stand up for shit that's right. And I think that's an important lesson.
That fucking rules.
Yeah, it was good. It's not where you expect the story to go at the beginning, and then M. Night Shyamalan comes in and twists it a little bit.
Well, I think that we are probably about time on this week's show, but before we close out, is there anything, I mean, anything in the world you would like to share with our audience?
I think the thing I would like to say to people who are currently feeling either politicized for the first time in their life or have been reinvigorated into their politics, it's a wonderful thing. Make sure you keep it up. Make sure your ears are always open and your eyes are always open. Racism specifically from Black people and people of color, because we always have things that we can improve on, and make sure that you don't burn out. It's not just because Minneapolis is defunding their police department doesn't mean that the fight is over. There's a long time to go until this world has any semblance of equitability. And it's really important that fervor and your voice stays loud and energetic throughout the whole process, because you don't want to half-ass this job, because there's no second chance on this one.
I dig it. Sound advice. Everybody, thanks for listening to this week's show, and hey, we'll see you next time.
listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.